Parables of the Messiah, number 78, The Unjust Judge, Luke 18, verses 1 to 8. If we may take verse 1 as a summary in Luke's report of what Jesus said, then we have a meaning of the parable provided by the Lord himself. Even if verse 1 should be Luke's own words, they are not, therefore, without authority for our guidance. They are still part of an inspired record. The authoritative key to the parable, then, is that men ought always to pray and not to faint. The parable was spoken to disciples appropriately in view of the subject. He spake unto them. Takes us back to chapter 17, verse 22, for the antecedent of the pronoun. And he said, unto the disciples, the days will come when ye shall desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and ye shall not see it. Jesus then warns them of the dangers of being deceived by false alarms that he has come. He speaks of his own sufferings and death, and of the conditions that will prevail in the day when he suddenly appears. See the parable of vultures for suggestions on the theme in Luke 17, verse 21 to 37. The background of the parable is the idea of a time of waiting, of apparent delay, which would be perplexing to men of faith in every age. The conditions of the world would be conducive to disappointment and despair, when disciples might lose hope in his coming again. Jesus, therefore, prescribes the antidote to counteract the effects upon the disciples of the conditions prevailing around them. Men must pray, must keep in touch with God, must be, as Isaiah said, the Lord's remembrancers, who keep not silent, and give him no rest until he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. Isaiah 62, verse 6 and 7, margin. Prayer, earnest and continual, in faith expressed, keeps the mind fixed on divine things, and although judging by outward signs there is no proof that God has heard, yet faith, based on the word of God, assures us that he has. This parable is one of the places in the scriptures where it is affirmed. Men must pray and not faint. The very juxtaposition of the two things shows that prayer is designed to prevent fainting. Men pray and do not faint. The converse is true. Men faint because they do not pray. We perish if we cease from prayer. Jesus tells the parable of a judge who was unjust, without fear of God or regard of men. What is more, while most men hide their misdeeds from themselves and rationalize their conduct, this man knew his own character, and was so depraved that he took a kind of satisfaction in the fact. When the widow persisted in her demands, he acknowledged to himself that he cared not for God or man. Though I fear not God nor regard man. Such a man was utterly unfit for the office of judge. Men of this character, however, have held office at one time or another in all countries, but the type of judge depicted in the parable has been more common in near eastern lands, both in the past and more recently under Turkish rule. The widow was a pathetic figure in the east. Generally without friend or helper, she suffered injustice and wrong. The law of Moses has many warnings against oppression of the widow, a fact which shows how common it must have been. Jesus himself denounced the Pharisees because they devoured widows' houses. The widow in the parable evidently suffered some oppression and sought redress. Her appeal fell for a time on deaf ears, but her persistence prevailed. She persevered in her complaint until the nuisance of her demands stirred the judge. With a sardonic pleasantry, he said that while he was indifferent to God and men, the woman was an annoyance, and she might get violent and strike him. He had better get rid of her. The defenceless woman, who could neither bully nor bribe, yet bothered him into yielding. The word rendered weary is literally, give me a black eye. Hence, in the general sense of bruise or strike. So Paul, using the same word, speaks of the buffeting his body and bringing it into subjection. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27. As Jesus had indicated the purpose before giving the parable, so at the end he draws the lesson intended by it. Here, he said, what the unjust judge saith. It is necessary to stress the word unjust, for the character of the man provides a contrast. An unjust judge responded to the persistent petition of a helpless woman. What will a just God do for his own chosen ones? Shall not a God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? The text upon which the Revised Version is based, in the last clause, is generally considered to be more accurate than the Authorized Version, and he is long-suffering over them. It may be doubted whether even this yields a very clear idea, but the general sense is that God may be long-suffering and seem to delay his response to the prayers of his people, yet the answer is sure to come. In the words of a quaint old commentator, we prevail with men by importunity because they are displeased with it, but with God because he is pleased with it. God will answer is the assertion of Jesus in the lesson of the parable. I tell you, he declares, that God will avenge them speedily. This does not mean God would do it immediately. The facts are against such an interpretation. What Jesus means is that God hears, but bears long, for he has his own time. And when the time comes, his action will be swift and decisive. Jesus ends his comment on a sad note. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? In spite of the fact that prayer prevails, and of the certainty that God will intervene, men do not believe in God's purpose. Jesus had said just before in the same discourse that in the day of his coming men would be given over to eating and drinking as in the days of Noah and of Lot. Chapter 17, verse 26 to 29. Nowhere in the teaching of Jesus or of the apostles is the effect of the preaching of the gospel declared to be other than the saving of a remnant. God is taking out of the Gentiles a people for his name, Acts 15, verse 14. The bearers of God's name, being instructed in the whole counsel of God, find in the deplorable indifference to divine things a confirmation of divine message and an encouragement to persevere themselves. While the parable is a lesson by contrast, how much more will God hear men? There is a certain appropriateness in the choice of a widow as the petitioner. The figure of the bride and the bridegroom in the parable of the bridegroom, Matthew 9, verse 15, is based on Old Testament references. In the Old Testament, the figure of widowhood is also found, being used of Zion. During the present time, bereaved of her children under the law, Zion endures the reproach of widowhood. Isaiah 54, verse 4. This, however, will pass, for she will be restored to favour. Her Maker is her husband. The God of all the earth shall he be called. Isaiah 54, verse 5. Jeremiah also lamented that the city of Jerusalem had become as a widow, Lamentations 1, verse 1. Widowhood in relation to God's people is the time when God's favour is not visibly manifested, when his people are apparently without a defence and a protector. From this point of view, the present time of Gentile ascendancy, when God's saints have for centuries been downtrodden and persecuted, might be compared to a state of widowhood for the Church of Christ. When the times of Israel come again, like Ruth, the bride of Christ will find in her bridegroom the Redeemer of the inheritance and also her husband. Parables of the Messiah, number 79, The Pharisee and the Publican, Luke 18, verses 9 to 14. The Lord Jesus made powerful use of contrast in several parables, notably when, with a few clear strokes, he gave a picture of two men who represent different classes in relation to himself or to God. A good illustration of this lesson by contrast is in the parable of the two men who prayed, found in Luke 18, verses 9 to 14. And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves, that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For every one that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. The one a Pharisee. To all who heard the words, it was a daring indictment of a class of men held in high esteem, who were very religious, and among whom were to be found some very sincere individuals. A Pharisee as regards the law, Paul could claim for himself without shame. But there were a great many Pharisees whose life was only outward show, profession but not practice. Pretense can invade all departments of life, even as Jesus shows, influencing the attitude in prayer when the thought that God sees the heart should strip away the covering put on for men to see. But as Jesus again makes clear, in that case a man is not praying to God. Although in his uttered words the Pharisee was addressing God, in reality he prayed with himself. He was posturing, finding satisfaction in his own reflections. He stands apart, feeling assured and satisfied that he is a man apart from others. He is better than other men. He is not guilty of their vices. And on the positive side, he fasts and tithes his income even to the garden herbs. But all the positive things he boasted in concerned external rites. He does not search his heart and his motives. To do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with his God does not enter his mind. In contrast, the publican, despised by his fellow Jews, despises himself as he stands before God. There is no pose, but a stricken sense of sinfulness, as with downcast eyes he smites his breast in his grief. But he appeals to God. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Or, as the Revised Version margin, be propitiated. A hint that the publican had in mind, the mercy of the propitiatory, the mercy seat of God in the holiest. The man must have had some discernment of the significance of the type of the Day of Atonement. When the high priest sprinkled the blood of the sin offering on the coverlid of the Ark of the Covenant, he felt the need of mercy, but believed also that the throne of God was one of mercy, when the sovereign rights of the great king were acknowledged in the way he had appointed. The publican, said Jesus, went away justified, accounted righteous, rather than the Pharisee. One fundamental difference between the two men is in their realization of their need. Both come to God. Both are sinners, but one knows it, the other does not. His failure springs from the very religiousness of his life, with its emphasis on rites. It turns his thoughts from conduct to ceremony, and emphasizing the form, he loses sight of the meaning. Are there no danger signals for us in the Pharisee's attitude? To do the daily readings from the Scriptures? To attend the meetings? Are these actions a means to an end, or an end in itself? It is possible to repeat the offensiveness of the Pharisee and like him to be blind to the fault. The self-exalted was abased. He put himself on high, but God esteemed him not. But the humble was exalted. In this conclusion, Jesus again uses the words of the parable of the feast, Luke 14, verses 7 to 11. There the men who strove for highest place were given the lowest. Is it without purpose that Luke tells us next of the rich young ruler who went away sorrowful? And in the following chapter, 19, we read of the publican Zacchaeus, to whose house salvation came. Are they the living counterparts of the two men of the parable?